want to welcome new sponsor Kraft Axe Throwing on board here at Fan Run Radio. For our listeners, they're offering 15% off your booking if you use the promo code FANRUN at checkout. That's one word, FANRUN. We know everyone has some aggression they need to release. Although that sounds a little, sounded better last week whenever we got that ready. Now the pent-up aggression.
It was that guy with the machete out in the street.
Yeah, that feels a little bit different now. But axes and beer. What better way to spend an evening with your friends? You can go make it a competition. I've done it before. It's a lot of fun. They got TVs whenever sports do come back. They got beer. They got seltzers. And they're giving you 15% off your booking when you use the promo code FANRUN at checkout. Plan your visit today, craftaxethrowing.com. It's over on 5th Avenue, just minutes away from downtown Knoxville. Support the people who support us. Cody, we had some Tennessee news. Which one do you want first, the recruiting news or the team in trouble news?
Team in trouble news?
Well, Tim Jordan, running back Tim Jordan, was arrested Saturday in Florida on felony charge of carrying a concealed weapon and two misdemeanor drug charges. He was released Saturday on $2,000 bond.
Yes, I read that over the weekend.
The weapon charge, I mean, you know, he's facing a third-degree felony. Usually these things don't end up that way. Usually you can get stuff down and dismissed and whatever you need to do, but as of right now, he is facing a third-degree felony for not having a permit to carry a concealed weapon and misdemeanor charges for possession and use of narcotic paraphernalia and cannabis possession, not more than 20 grams, so he had some weed on him.
Just a little weed.
Not more than 20 grams, though, could be a,
could be
a good amount.
19 and a half grams.
Yeah.
It's quite a bit of weed.
Yeah.
So the gun thing.
It's quite a bit of weed, but not... The key is it's not enough to, like, you know, make it look like he was out selling.
Right.
Or, you know,
right.
Transporting a lot. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not a lot for personal use. I mean, if he has 10 or 15 grams of weed with him, I mean, I know that's a lot to smoke at one time, but that's not a lot.
It's still quite a bit of weed to have on you.
Yeah, if he didn't have a scale. Yeah, if he had, like, a scale, they would have got
like
him a intent to sale.
Stuff, yeah. That's what that would have got him in trouble.
Right, but I mean, for someone to have just, you know, and it could just be 3 or 4 grams.
Right.
You guys are looking at the high end.
No more than 20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to me, I'm just saying the weed stuff isn't a huge deal. And, you know, across the country, we have kind of all come together and said that that's not a huge deal, but not in Florida yet, at least. So right now, Tim Jordan is facing, you know, charges over it right now.
Most of the country's okay with the grass. I guess the weapon would be the thing that stands out from the story.
Yeah, the Knoxville News Sentinel reported that Tim Jordan was arrested shortly before 5 a.m. He was stopped after Lakeland police spotted him speeding and swerving into the bicycle lane. A 17-year-old male passenger was in his car and was also arrested. Jordan told police he had a loaded Ruger LCP pistol in his back pocket. After searching his vehicle, they found 9.25 grams of marijuana, a scale, and several plastic bags. So he did find the scale.
Okay, but 2.5, he doesn't have enough to intent to sell.
No, 9.2.
Oh, 9.2. Oh.
And they did find a scale?
Yeah, and several plastic bags.
That could be bad. Yeah, that could be bad. That's intent to sell.
Well, I thought they would already charge him for that then.
It's
Can they go up on charges after that happens? Because, I mean, if you think if you have several baggies and a scale, you would think that you are taking the 9.25 grams and going to weigh them out to sell to people.
Yeah, seems like you might be distributing them.
It would be weird to have several plastic bags.
Maybe you want to weigh your own amount for each day, you know?
Again, the several plastic bags would be the...
Yeah, you do it like, the medicine, the Monday through Sunday.
Yeah.
The pill bottles. Maybe he's doing it like that. You just want to have a little baggie for each day.
Tennessee, a lot of people said, is back now, as they have surged in the Fulmer Cup standings. What do we expect from Tim Jordan here? Anything?
I mean, I would hope he's, still on the team and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
I mean, do one of those internal discipline kind of things,
Okay.
Stadium steps or whatever they do.
Just some discipline, not a dismissal.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you ask him about the gun, and what's the deal with the gun, and I guess that could be a little bit more concerning. I don't know.
Well, I mean, if they go with the intent to sell stuff, which, again, it's not the charge right now, I would imagine that'd be a little concerning, too, just from an optics standpoint.
Yeah, you probably need to take care of that by saying, hey, man, don't sell weed. Here's a bag of cash, you know. But is Tim Jordan high enough up on the...
I mean, people get dismissed for weapon charges. I mean, this is, I mean, like, that's a... You know, just recently, was it Dante Starks, I guess, from LSU was just dismissed? Was Isaiah Crowell, was he dismissed for gun charges, I think, too,
he
maybe?
Did, or, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it has happened before. Like, when you've had people get pulled over with guns and drugs, like, that is sometimes cause for dismissal. Now, you know, I would like to see in these other instances if there had been other run-ins with these people, if they were on strike two or so, like... Tim Jordan hasn't found himself in any trouble here that we know of since getting here, so maybe the first one is a warning. But, you know, across the country, across the SEC, we have seen people get dismissed because of this.
I remember the Alabama lineman a couple years ago. He had the gun down in Louisiana. Mm. You remember that? The offensive tackle. He was like a top draft pick. I can't remember the guy's name. It wasn't Quanjo, was it?
I don't remember the story.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find it.
Was the gun charge what was the third degree felony?
Yes.
Okay, because apparently intent to sale is also a third degree felony in Florida.
Well, they're charging him with misdemeanor, so at least that's what the ESPN news story had. Okay,
you got to look at that because under 20 grams is like misdemeanor, but intent to sale ups it to a third degree felony. So
okay,
it was Cam Robinson. Mm. He had possession and the illegal possession of a gun. So it was kind of the same exact thing. But obviously he didn't get dismissed.
And like I said, Dante Starks was a LSU freshman. He is the most recent one. He got kicked off, you know, in the middle of May they just went ahead and dismissed him. They had suspended him during the season and just went ahead and dismissed him. So we'll see what happens with Tim Jordan. I mean, I haven't seen any statements from Jimmy Pruitt. Probably the last thing he wants to deal with right now. In terms of news dumps, I mean, this didn't make a lot of headlines. I mean, it's a story out there, but, you know, it just...
Got a post on CBS.
Yeah, I mean, it's out there because people need sports news, but I'm saying, like, not a lot of people paid attention to it, you know what I mean? Just because the world is dealing with bigger things right now.
Which, if you got to have negative news as a program, that's probably the best time for it to... come about.
That's kind of what I was getting at. Yeah, we'll see what happens with Tim Jordan. Tennessee needs some running back depth, I feel like. Tim Jordan is someone who, you know, has shown that he can play at this level.
Yeah, I mean,
he's worthy of being on Tennessee's team.
He's an adequate rotation back.
Right. I don't think I want him to be my starter or even my second guy, maybe. But, I mean, he has come in and he has... shown he can play a little bit. Probably had a better 2018 than he did in 2019, at least in terms of production. You know, lost some carries to Eric Gray, and I would imagine everyone's going to lose more carries to Eric Gray. But if you just look at the last two regular seasons, last two games of the regular season, I mean, Tim Jordan got the ball a lot. He had 14 carries against Missouri, had 74 yards, and 11 carries against Vanderbilt, only 40 yards. Then the bowl game, only two carries. But, I mean, like I said, Eric Gray just had it going there. And it was a weird game because Tennessee didn't do much in that, second and third quarter offensively. It was a weird offensive performance. But, yeah, like I said, this is a guy who has, you know, got 104 carries last year.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy you want to have on your team. He's a good rotation back.
Mm-hmm.
And I just I hope he's able to come back, you know.
We'll see what happens. You also had I have found it very interesting, the Jeremy Banks Redemption Tour. You saw a story go viral over the weekend of him
posted
stopping to help someone's car who had broken down.
Yeah, yeah, he's trying to get back on the team. I think.
It seems as if he is doing everything he can.
And we need a linebacker. You know, we need depth at linebacker.
Kind of need a running back, maybe, if Tim Jordan's gone, too.
Yeah. Well, the good thing about him, we know he can do both. fumbles a little bit.
We know he can do both, sort of, kind of.
Yeah. But he's a good depth guy.
One of those things he can't do, like, he can't do either one great. I don't know if he can do either one good, but he can do both of them.
Yeah. Has he gone all the way over to the All Lives Matter side? Has he completely overcorrected? Because he went from fighting cops to... Didn't he post an All Lives Matter kind of thing?
He wants back on the team. But yes, he has tried to redo his image. He has tried to repair his image from threatening cops to now saying he sees the bigger picture and that everyone is equal and all these things. So, I mean, he is. It could have gone one of two ways when someone like Jeremy Banks gets in trouble and you see the footage and you see that the statements coming out of him. Then he gets kicked off a team. It could have gone one of two ways. And I'll say credit to Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt for not throwing him away and for trying to kind of, you know, whatever's happening is happening privately in terms of what they're telling him and his chances of getting back on the team, because they haven't really talked about it out in the open. I mean, it's kind of a poorly kept secret that he can work his way back on there.
Yeah, you can tell they care about his future, you know.
And, you know, whether or not he ever plays another down for Tennessee, I would say credit to Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt and Jeremy Banks for at least trying to stay on a path and to try to correct a ugly situation.
Well, right? I mean, everybody makes mistakes.
Everyone makes mistakes, and I don't know what will happen if Jeremy Banks is reinstated, right? Like, I don't think you'll see the national media come and say, well, look at all of his recent social media posts. Look at the change that he has tried to display over the last year. It will all be, this is the guy who had told the cops that they get shot where he's from.
Memphis.
Yeah, though he's not really from Memphis. He's from Cordova.
Oh, he's... yeah. I hate people that do that.
Yeah,
he says Memphis.
No, yeah.
Jeez.
Is Cordova...
I've heard Cordova is just like a nice part of that area. Like, it's not like he's from Orange Mound or anything like that. Is what I just, you know, saw people saying.
Yeah, Cordova's pretty far over on the east side.
So you won't have like the national media picking up the redemption stories. At least you won't have most of them. You will just have, oh wow, Jeremy Pruitt has reinstated the guy who had threatened to shoot cops. That'll be the headline. But either way, I will say credit to Tennessee and everyone involved for not throwing this guy out. For not just severing ties. And again, like I said, whether or not he ever plays another down for Tennessee, either way, they have tried to keep him on a certain path. We had an unfortunate situation over the weekend with Tennessee. Talk about that next. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio.
David.
Brother Bellis in the back. Sweet singers. Bizarre story over the weekend as Tennessee picked up a commitment and then, just never kind of acknowledged it. And then he deleted his commitment as. In state, down in Cleveland, Bradley County, 3-star wide receiver Trey Curry, a 4-star on ESPN, I believe, committed to Tennessee, posted out a big graphic, a big message about almost giving up but he's glad he's didn't because this moment is so sweet, and, you know, tweeted out, and you didn't get the usual booms and to the top and on a mission tweets that you usually do when other players commit, just it was kind of crickets. And then you had the report, I believe, from Ryan Callahan from 247 saying that Tennessee just wasn't ready to accept his commitment yet, so he had to delete his announcement.
That's too bad.
That's rough.
That's too bad.
That's rough.
Sucks for him, but I guess we're at that point now.
Well, I mean, that's the thing with Tennessee in recruiting right now. They are full.
That would suck, though, to think you're committing somewhere, you know, and think everything's good to go and tweet it out and say, here I am, and then, you know, Have to redact it.
You probably expect, you know, you just get all the calls and texts, your phone's blowing up, you're expecting fanfare, like this is a big time moment, and then you have to take it down and have some egg on your face. And I do wonder if, you know, I don't know what I would do if I was a prospect and that happened to me, but I would almost feel like, okay, well, I'm just finding a different school.
I think at that point you probably would, yeah.
I think that's how I would be. Fair or foul, I don't know. Like, maybe this is all on his fault. Like, I don't know how recruiting works. Like, I don't know if you have to give the coaches a heads up, like, hey, I'm getting ready to make my announcement.
I would think you would maybe do that, but I think that we would check and maybe do some research on it first on how to do it. But, you know, if you're him, you're just a high school kid, and you're like, this is where I'm going. They offered me. Boom, here I am.
Right.
You might be quicker to jump on something like
that. But you see those breakdowns all the time of, like, schools and how many scholarships they offer, and, you know, it's in the 600s sometimes for the teams at the top, offering 600-700 scholarships a cycle.
Yeah.
Obviously, you can't take all 600 or 700 of those. So maybe they offered Trey Curry 2 months ago before Tennessee's hot streak, and they've had that offer sitting there.
Now that he sees all that momentum, like, you would think he would check in first.
You would think. But, I mean, like, this isn't a bad prospect, I don't think, is the rub here. Like, I mean, he has offers. I mean, you know, it's listed between him on his 247 profile, the two schools that have the, quote, warm interest. Usually that's how you can, you know, see who's in the battle. Mm-hmm. It's Tennessee and Auburn. It says he has an offer from Georgia. Now, whether or not he has a committable offer from Georgia, I doubt. You know, like, I mean, if he doesn't have one from Tennessee right now, I'm going to guess he doesn't have one from Georgia. But this is a, you know, 6'4", 210-pound kid with good leaping ability, and they say he's a good athlete down at, you know, in an in-state school. Now, Tennessee doesn't go down to Chattanooga too often and pluck guys. I mean, they'll get one from Udawal every now and then. They tried to get Jay Hardy out of Chattanooga. That didn't go well.
Well, maybe Auburn has established their connections there, and he'll end up going to Auburn.
Maybe. Which, I mean, again, who knows if the Auburn offer is committable right now. Because, I mean, this is just a weird time whenever you've had almost double the amount of people coming to make their commitment early. You know what I mean? Like, this, the COVID stuff has pushed up the timeline. The dead periods have pushed up the timeline. And people are trying to get on board.
I just feel bad for him. You know, his friends are probably clowning him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I hope not. There's certain things your friends can clown you for, but like...
You thought you were going to Tennessee.
Yeah. I feel like there's certain things your friends can clown you for, and like, I don't think this is one of them. Like, if it's something actually, like, sad, something that actually might bother you, I feel like you got to be supportive in this time.
I think your friends would definitely clown you for that. If you said you're going to this school and then turns out you couldn't actually commit, I feel like they'd be clowning you.
Maybe.
You thought you were going to Tennessee.
Yeah, maybe some.
Go over to Tech, maybe.
Nah, you got to be careful. You don't want to, like, you know, give up on this guy just yet, because there's still chances he does go play somewhere big, and you want some tickets, and you want to still be able to go up and go to the kickbacks with him. But
yeah,
according to his timeline, Tennessee offered him December of 2018.
It was a long time ago. That might make it even worse. Maybe he feels like he's had such a long relationship with him, and he's so close with him. He's like, I'm going to go ahead and commit. Yeah.
Well, like, on his recruiting profile, it does list his two recruiters as, I mean, if you're on Tennessee staff and you're an offensive player, there's two guys that you probably, if Tennessee is sending both of these guys at you, you probably think that they really want you. And those are T. Martin and Brian Niedermeyer. Those are listed as his two recruiters, as primary and a secondary recruiter. So you would think they have the A-team going after him, that they want him. I don't know if this guy just had a bad junior season or what, because, I mean, like, you know, at the end of 2018, so I guess it was a year and a half ago at this point, I mean, picked up a Tennessee offer in December, picked up a Georgia offer in February, picked up an A&M offer in February, Louisville, South Carolina, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Nebraska, Memphis.
Got some good offers.
Like, those all happened before last season, though. So I wonder if, like, he just had a disappointing year and, like, hasn't progressed because, you know, when you pick up Tennessee, Georgia, A&M in a two-month period, you probably think you're getting ready to blow up, right?
Yeah, I mean, what happens? Like, do schools withdraw those offers?
I don't think they actually withdraw them. I think they just move them off the board, like, and you're like, okay, like, we'll still have a relationship. But, I mean, Tennessee probably didn't think they would be in a position where they have one available spot right now. Yeah, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Are they not at 24 commitments right now? So, I mean, like, they're still recruiting a bunch of people. So, like, maybe they don't want to have to make an idea of – maybe it's worse to process in-state guys.
Yeah, well, if this guy had committed back in March, you know, like, if somehow he could have seen what was going to happen or committed when the momentum started flowing, you know, maybe he'd have a spot.
Yeah, see, I don't know. You know, you get through his football season this year, he was – up here for an unofficial visit for the BYU game. Went to unofficially visit South Carolina. Came back to unofficially visit again for the South Carolina game. So they've had him on campus twice unofficially. He picked up an Auburn offer January 9th. Picked up an Ole Miss offer April 30th. So, I mean, a couple of schools have still gotten on board with him this last, you know, year. This last couple months, I mean, Ole Miss and Auburn. But again, Tennessee is in a situation where they're looking around and they just don't have a lot of spots. And like I said, is it worse to process an in-state guy to take a commitment from someone down the road and then have to be like, hey, man, sorry, better people are coming on board. We're not going to be able to take you. Is it better to do that?
Either in-state guy or places you have a really good relationship.
Sure.
You know,
which I mean, Tennessee is going to want to continue to recruit Chattanooga and North Georgia, like all the way down to Ringgold and Marietta. Like down 75 for a good 3 hours. Like Tennessee needs to.
We get a lot of players out of that.
Tennessee
area.
Needs to have strong ties down 75. Like I mean, through like I said, through Chattanooga, Cleveland, Georgia. Let's not burn bridges there. We need to have good ties there. So maybe they're just like, hey, like we don't want to accept this because we. Probably aren't going to be able to honor it right now. Although, is it more embarrassing for him to have to delete it? Or I don't like. In a perfect world, like he never would have put out an announcement.
I mean, it would definitely be embarrassing if you're him.
Right, and like I said, in a perfect world, they probably wish he never would have put out any type of announcement. What would you do if you were him? Look elsewhere. Go to Auburn.
I'd probably be pretty mad. And but like, I think you'd have the friends in your ear too, like, oh yeah, forget that school, man. Like they don't deserve you anyways. And yeah,
is Auburn mad at him at this point for like, oh wow, you're gonna pick Tennessee? Where your rebound plan? We don't want you here either.
They may fake that angle for a while, but if they really like the player, I think they'd still take him.
Yeah, so. I don't think they would look at it that way because this kind of stuff happens all the time.
Yeah, no, I'm curious to see what happens with this kid now. I didn't realize there was a kid down at Bradley this good. He's a 3-star, but he is, the composite, he is, you know, the 400th ranked player. So, I mean, he's on radars. And like I said, has, whether or not they're committable or not, he has a pretty good offer list.
I think you probably still, like if you're Tennessee, you probably still keep him around close by, you know, if you can. I mean, who knows that the class is going to be just so good you can't take him. When you look at his offer list, I think I'd be cool with taking him, maybe processing out a couple of those other guys.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what will happen here. And like I said, Tennessee already has 24 people on board right now. So the spots are pretty much full. And, you know, maybe the optics look even worse if you have a full 25 commit class and then you're still taking commitments and still, like, you know, having people come on. Maybe, like, Tennessee's trying to at least keep one spot open in case a big dog wants to hop on immediately and you don't have to make any tough, bad decisions.
Yeah, I mean, it's – you got to know how to manage it, I guess, when you get as many commitments as they did in that time frame.
Is this wrong? I mean, does it feel dirty to you?
Well, I mean, on one hand, because the guy's an in-state guy and he's just, you know, an hour and a half down the road, like – I don't know if you're Tennessee. I don't know if you're in a position to just push away a guy like that who has good offers. Mm-hmm. I would say take a commitment from him or at least keep him close by. I wouldn't tell him to look elsewhere.
Well, I mean, you have told him to look elsewhere, whether or not you.
I think I'd take a commitment from him.
Whether or not you told him look elsewhere, like you not honoring his commitment is yelling to him, hey, buddy, your position in this class isn't reserved.
Well, it seems that way. You know, I don't know. I mean, they have their reasons.
Tennessee doesn't have the luxury of going with the Clemson model, right? I mean, because Clemson pretty much offers like 30 scholarships a year.
They turned away a five-star last year, didn't they? Or like a really high,
four-star, I think. But Clemson doesn't do this, and like Tennessee doesn't have the luxury of just being selective. They don't have that yet, and maybe they'll never have that. Maybe they don't want that. Maybe they want to constantly be committing, and the class is going to be fluid at all times. At what point do we start seeing decommitments from Tennessee? This week, next week, is it? I mean, because like we all know they're coming. Like,
yeah,
you have 24 commitments right now, and you're recruiting 7-8 other guys. Like, this is going to happen, and the decommitments could be good processing commitments. It could be somebody else. Like, at what point does Tennessee see decommitments?
I was going to say, I'm not sure when, but I was going to say, I would assume it's a good sign. I would think it would be, you're telling people, hey, start looking elsewhere because we got some people as long that as you're not really good about.
We'll wait and see who they are
sign. Yeah, you don't want it to be Terrence Lewis.
Yeah.
Dylan Brooks.
But if it's like the lower-rated prospects we have and they start decommitting, it's definitely one of those, you would think or assume and hope that it's, you know, we got some good guys we feel really good about. So we're kind of nudging the other guys out the door.
Maybe it'll happen around the time they get ready to sign the other guy, or you know, maybe some other guys start to say they're ready to commit. If you get like a, you know, a couple of four or five star blue chip guys and say, "Hey, we're ready to commit," then maybe all of a sudden you see a couple of three stars disappear, which I would be fine with. Either way, it looks like we're going to have a pretty good class this year.
Okay. Just checking. Just wondering.
I mean, I hope that we do a little processing and improving. You know, I hope we land a few more four stars, guys with big offers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm cool with that. But even if we just locked in the class today that we have, it's a good class. Even if it's the exact same way it is right now on signing day, we've landed a good class.
You're locking that in?
No, I'm not locking it in. I'm just saying if it were to happen. Like, at this point, everything's kind of icing, isn't it?
I don't think so.
I think it is. I mean, we got 9 4 stars and a 5-star already, and a lot of good 3 stars with offers.
So you're locking it in?
I don't want to say I'm locking it in, because I think
you're fine with locking it in.
Well, I think it can be improved. I just mean, like, in a typical year, I would not be disappointed with this class. And this is a top 10 class.
This is a top 10 class?
I think so. Like, as it stands?
Yeah.
I believe it is.
Where's Tennessee at right now in points? They're at 259 points.
Yeah.
Last year, 259 would have put you... Yeah, I guess right at number 11 or 12.
Okay, so friends top 10. I'm not saying I'd lock it in. I'm just saying, like, from this point forward, we're in a really good spot to just be able to kind of pick and choose. Kind of focus on some blue chip guys, maybe. Instead of trying to, you know, wrangle a class together. Okay. Which, where we've been, like, think about, like, Pruitt's first class. You know, we were going all the way up to signing day trying to figure out if we were going to get anybody.
Yeah, but we landed a pretty good, we did pretty good that first year.
Did we? I feel like we missed out on a lot in the first year.
Oh, 2018?
Yeah. Okay. Which he hadn't even had a full.
I was talking 2019, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. He hadn't even had a full season.
I was talking 2019, but you're right. Yeah, but we missed a lot on.
I'm just saying I'd rather be in a position now, you know, with this class we've got, and to me it looks like maybe icing on the cake is not the right way to put it, but it looks to me like it's pretty set and you can kind of pick and choose, maybe process a guy here or there. Seems like you've put a lot of good work in.
I think Tennessee still has some work to do, personally.
Certain positions to fill or certain guys you
think? I think they got work to do keeping some of these guys, and I think they got work to do trying to grab a couple more big-time prospects because – you know, it's all about what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I assume that I know the answer to this question, but if Tennessee, if this class is pretty much done, you would acknowledge that they are not finishing ahead of Georgia, correct?
Right, yeah.
Probably going to be battling neck and neck with Florida at that point.
Right.
in just in terms of the East.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I hope that they don't go home and just sit on the couch until December.
Obviously.
On the terms of recruiting. You know, I'm just saying it's nice to have a leg up and be out in front and be able to, because to me that means you can focus more on the big guy like a Marius Mims or somebody like that. You can put a lot of resources into him now.
Yeah, I think that's really slowed down the Mims stuff. I don't want to break your heart. I mean,
well,
I know
well whoever.
I'm just saying, I know that's a guy you've been really wanting, but I think Tennessee's momentum with that has kind of stopped.
Well, maybe you just go put a tent out on the street in front of his house.
I think you just really focus on Mondon now. Mondon, however the hell you say
Mondon.
Mondon.
I don't know.
Whoever. The five-star linebacker.
Do you see what I'm saying, though? If you don't have to be out on the road all the time trying to sign all these different guys, you can focus more on them, use more resources on one guy,
mm-hmm.
maybe really show them how much you want them. Like I said, you could just camp out in front of their house for like a couple weeks.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It was unfortunate for Trey Curry. I wonder if it'll be named Trey Curry. Just watching Steph run around. It'd be kind of weird, right? Yeah, because I mean, he was born obviously before
Trey Young and Steph Curry combined. Like,
yeah, Curry for Trey.
Kind of feel like you should be a
Curry for three. You probably should play basketball, I guess. Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know. It feels like it'd be kind of weird.
Guess he missed his calling.
He might play basketball too. I don't know.
With a name like that, you would hope so.
Okay. Did you think anything about Drew Tennessee's statement? We got a couple minutes here. I guess not really time for a commercial break. Tennessee's statement, they put out thoughts on the group uniform blanket statement.
Well, I mean, they said the things that a lot of people have been saying over the weekend.
I think the message was good. I'll admit, on Saturday, I was wondering when the statement was going to come out, especially when, you know, Kirby Smart put his out, just because you don't want to look at it through that lens, but I think it's important to have your coaches say something. Like, I thought it was a bad look. You know, Clemson had Trevor Lawrence speaking out before Dabo had made a statement.
Has Dabo said anything yet?
I still haven't seen Dabo say anything. Dabo was quick to talk about Colin Kaepernick, but hasn't been quick to talk about this. And I do think, like, you know, when you look at the demographics of a locker room, when you are a white head coach in charge of mentoring, and, you know, you always tell, in recruiting, I'd imagine you tell the parents that you are going to be a father figure in their life, a mentor, things like that. Now's a time where you have a lot of people looking to you for leadership, and I do think you have to come out and make a statement. I do think that's necessary. And
headline from Sports Illustrated is, "Silence is not golden. Where is Dabo Swinney?"
I mean, it's a thing. Like, yeah, people want to know. Like, Dabo is one of the more vocal coaches.
Saban released a statement.
Dabo's always willing to talk about things. But he hasn't said anything yet. And you could say he doesn't have a responsibility to, and if that's how you feel, then you're entitled to that opinion. But like I said, I think when you look at the demographics of a locker room and you've made promises to people's parents that you are going to take care of their kid, I do think you have, you know, it's important for you to look like an ally.
Especially with a platform like that.
And again, especially when you have not been shy about speaking out. Put a microphone in front of Dabo and talk about players getting paid. Dabo has a lot to say.
Well, you got a locker room. There's, what, 120 guys on a team?
Something like that.
Say Clemson, 70% of those guys are black guys.
I would say that's probably accurate.
I mean, you're looking at, what, just call it 80 families that are affected by this, you know?
Yep.
And you are, like you said, you're the chief, the guy that runs that university, basically.
And again.
So you got, I think you got to say something.
If you're a coach that hasn't made statements before, maybe you have a little bit less pressure. But again, Dabo has been someone who has been vocal. He spoke out against paying players and said he would quit football if players ever got paid. He said that, he talked about Kaepernick. He talked about having a sin problem. He talked about all these things. So he has been willing to be vocal about this.
Haven't heard anything from Mike Gundy. Yeah, he did. Yeah, did hear
something. I mean, like, there's been a lot of coaches that, I mean, like, it didn't happen right away. Like, you, I'll give Kirby Smart credit. He was one of the first to go out on Saturday and say something. And how do we feel about Tennessee doing the blanket statement? Is that
I would rather have seen Jeremy Pruitt say something himself, I think, because But you rarely see that from him, you know? He's one of those guys that doesn't say a lot.
Probably. He'll give a soundbite, though, when he's asked. Like, I mean, it's not the same thing, but he has talked about transfers and players' rights a little bit, like in terms of we got to do what's best for the players. Like he was a proponent of that. So, I mean, he's spoken out a couple times.
I think we typically view him as a guy that's got his players' back, but I would like to hear that publicly. I would like to him actually come out and say something because he rarely does that, you know. I would like to see that as opposed to the blanket statement. Because when you issue a blanket statement, you're kind of, here's generally what we all think, it's not an individual.
Well, order. I mean, they signed their name to it, and the blanket statement can't work, right? The Declaration of Independence was a blanket statement that had everyone's signatures on it, so, I mean, that worked.
Okay, one of them particularly large.
If everyone is on, what a move by
Hancock!
Him. What a move by him.
I was really in on this.
Power move by him. But, like, I'm saying, like, if you have a universal feeling inside the athletic department, I think it's okay to have a blanket statement. Like I said, I think Tennessee's was really good. I liked what they said. They did not hide under we got to do better. It's systematic, blah, blah, blah. They came out and flat out said, we have to do better. And if you like our black athletes, like them, like them when they're not just on the field for you, like them all the time.
Yeah, they said everything that needed to be said.
And I thought that was a powerful statement, and it was not hiding behind unfortunate times. It's not hiding behind, oh, we got to do better as a country. It's everyone's got to take care of each other. No, it was basically like, you like our black players when they're playing football. Please like our black players off the field. Please help them. Please stand with them, even when it's uncomfortable for you, because that's what it's going to take. And everyone's name's attached to that, and I thought it was powerful, and I thought it was really good. So I don't know how I feel whether or not I want to see Pruitt make a separate statement, because if that's how they feel, and Pruitt has spoken in favor of players' rights, and you can look at it and say that's not a race issue or whatever when it comes to saying you want your players to be able to transfer and do what's best for their career, but it's about looking out for the players and having their best interests at heart and not like what's going to cause you wins or losses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not saying that he necessarily has to release an individual statement. I'm just saying that if he did, it could only do good. You know, that I think that would be good to just attach your own thoughts on it.
Well, speaking of this whole conversation, just coming out not too long ago, coming across a timeline now Grace Rainer, Clemson reporter for The Athletic, she tweets out that Dabo Swinney will address the media today at 3:30, Clemson announces. Okay. So I guess the word has got back to Dabo that his silence is deafening, and we'll see what Dabo comes up with at 3:30. Hour one in the books. We'll kick off hour two next with headlines. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio. The MLB Players Association has, given a counter to the owners. They want a return-to-play proposal that includes 114 games, not 81. They won 114 games, which would obviously lead to more money for the players, more money for the owners. And in addition to the 114 games, they want deferred salaries in the event of a canceled postseason and the option for all players to opt out of a potential 2020 season due to the coronavirus
concerns.
What was that?
I was just reading word for word what you were reading. I figured out where you were getting it.
Yes, this comes from ESPN's news about the proposal of the 114-game season. This is not a report from me. This is from ESPN.
Yeah, I know. It was just funny because I happened to be reading along as soon as you – I was reading the exact same thing you were saying.
Yeah.
Wonder if the owners will play ball on this deal.
Well, I don't know, because I feel like you had a pretty big voice in baseball, Buster Olney. Rod a pretty scathing, by his standards, takedown on ESPN about all of the bad moves that the owners have done right now. Like, they should be losing the PR battle. I wonder where fans are right now. Cody, you've already made your take clear, you are in favor of the players.
I certainly am, John.
Cam, as a non-baseball fan, are you in favor of the players or the owners in terms of getting this season on track?
Owners, if it means less games. I don't really want 114 baseball games.
Okay, fair enough.
That seems like a lot. That seems like it will be going forever. Yeah, like I can take baseball in small doses, but like, yeah, there's no way I'd want to have
to deal
with
that. Don't care either way. You're not on anybody's side. You just it's
yeah, I think they get paid too much and they play too much, so I'm
okay,
out.
Just cut your mic off for this.
Does second. Seem like the owners are a little.
That's on me. I shouldn't have asked
Cam about baseball.
Yeah, just cut your mic off, Cam.
Seems to me like the owners are a little bit ahead in the count when it comes to the negotiations, though.
Yeah.
So
you think the owners are winning right now?
I think they're a little bit ahead in the count. That's all I'm saying.
So that would imply you think that they are
I don't think
in an advantage right now?
Yeah, I don't think we've struck out on a deal. I just think that where we're at right now, you know, the players, this news coming out about the players is more of a, what would you call it, kind of a base hit compared to the total negotiations. They need to get closer to the same page, is basically what I'm saying.
I'm not sure if I understand the base hit one.
Well, this is essentially, it's a base hit, so it's on the right track toward hopefully getting a deal done, but you still don't have a run. You know, you still haven't scored a run here.
So the 114-game proposal is a base hit?
I think so, yeah.
Have we seen the owners that the owners like it? Because I don't feel like it's – we don't know if it's progress because we don't know if the owners like it. Like, I don't know if this is any closer or not. Like, I don't know how the owners are going to feel about the whole canceling the post – or they want deferred money in case the playoffs don't happen. They want to be able to opt out of the season if they want. I don't know how the owners feel about this, so I don't know if I would be willing to call it a base hit just yet.
It's kind of a wait-and-see mentality right now.
Yeah. You got any more baseball terms?
Let's just keep talking about it, and we'll see if any more come.
I thought you were going to go with in a pickle. Do you know what that means, to be in a pickle?
Is that a baseball term?
Yeah.
I mean, I've always heard it. I didn't know it was a baseball term, though.
Okay.
I know in the hole.
What is in the hole?
When the batter follows the on-deck batter.
Okay.
The batter who follows the on-deck batter.
Yeah. Two batters. Exactly. He's
Smith is up at the plate and Johnson's in the hole.
No. 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 That's not what it would be.
Okay. Here's what it is. Smith's up at the plate. Johnson's on deck.
Yeah.
And Reynolds is in the hole.
Correct. That would be it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My bad. I knew that. I just skipped a guy.
Skip I don't know if you knew it because I feel like you Googled these, but you worked your way there.
Let just
does your Google not have in a pickle? Does it not have what that means?
I don't know. I don't know. You threw me a line drive with the in the pickle reference, and I haven't been able to catch it yet. But just you're the lead runner here, so please continue the segment.
This could get ugly, like as Buster Olney wrote, and like I said, he is one of the go-to voices in baseball. He says this is something that, you know, we are not worried just about the 2020 season. This could carry over into 2021 because it's obvious that the owners and the Players Association and the players are pretty far off on what they think. And I haven't seen this point made, but I feel like this has been brewing for a couple years. Like, do you remember 2 years ago when you had Bryce Harper and who was the other guy? Bryce Harper and third baseman, shortstop.
Talking about the guy that made big money?
Yeah, he ended up with the Padres.
Manny Machado.
Manny Machado, good job by you. When Manny Machado and Bryce Harper were free agents, like I don't know if you remember how that free agency went, but neither one of those guys and none of the other free agents like got a deal for like 2 months. It was just a whole big wait and see thing. Like the owners basically squeezed all the free agents to the point where all the players were rebelling. Do you remember that? Like the players were all mad that they weren't getting offers. And the owners had kind of, it almost seemed like collusion. They had got together to be like, hey, we're not going to give these big-ass contracts anymore. And even if we do give them to these two players, like everyone else is going to have to suffer because of it. Everyone else is getting like one-year deals. So this standoff has been brewing for a while between the owners and the players. The fractures, this comes from Buster Olney. I don't know if you're on this article or not. The fractures between the lead negotiating groups led by Commissioner Rob Manfred and Union Chief Tony Clark have developed into a, quote, gaping chasm of suspicion and frustration.
A gaping chasm, huh?
Yeah. That
sounds oddly dangerous.
It seems like they are worlds apart. It seems like they are standing on the opposite sides of the Grand Canyon right now, is the way that makes it seem.
Yeah.
Sources say there is a group of owners perfectly willing to shut down the season to slash payroll costs and reduce losses. Pirates owner Bob Nutting used the shutdown as an avenue to suspend team contributions to employees' 401k plans. Basically, that just resulted in tens of thousands of dollars of savings whenever they need to be making, you know, millions. The Oakland Athletics' John Fisher decided to eliminate the $400 weekly salaries of minor leaguers, which he's in trouble losing his whole team if he can't afford that. Like, he might end up losing the team over this.
I believe you'd call that an error.
On the other hand, you do have teams like the Tigers, Padres, and Royals who are deciding to pay the minor leaguers. Which, I mean, that's nice and all to pay the minor leaguers. I mean, $400, I believe, a week isn't that drastic for these billionaire owners. It's been really weird to see. Like, you saw it in the NBA when this first happened, when you had Zion and a couple other NBA players. Like, hey, don't worry, workers of the arena. We will take care of you and your family with some salaries because you guys mean a lot to us, the security of the arena. We appreciate you guys. We'll pay for it. Nice of the, you know, the players making a lot of money, but the owners were nowhere to be found. Same as, you know, you had David Price last week saying, I'll pay the Dodgers minor league people. I got that. Don't worry. And then yesterday you had the Washington Nationals come out as a team and say, we're going to all pull money together and we'll take care of it. Because we've all been minor leaguers before and we realize the minor leaguers are a big part of this team. Because you'll always have guys get called up. Like, the minor leaguers, it's weird that baseball would want to piss those guys off, but they have power over them for a long time, the owners do. Like, if you're a minor leaguer, you're pretty much under control for, what, 6 or 7 years? Yeah. Something like that in terms of your salary. It takes you a while before you can get the big, big bucks. But you see the other players saying, we've all been minor leaguers, we have empathy, we know what it's like, and we know that at some point, if we're going to be a successful team, and the Nationals want to be a successful team, they just won a World Series, they want to continue to be good, they realize that at some point they're going to have to rely on some AA players that come up. Some call-ups that will either have to fill in for injured players or are just ready to take that step to fill some holes that they lost in free agency. And they're saying, hey, we got your back. So when you just look at it that way, yeah, the owners are losing the PR battle, or should be losing the PR battle so far.
That's kind of like the owners who wouldn't pay the employees of the NBA arenas. Like, Zion Williamson had to come out and say basically he would pay those people. It's kind of a similar thing with these minor league and major league players.
Is it?
I think it's kind of similar, yeah.
Why didn't I think of that?
It just shows the owner's greed.
Yeah, why didn't I think of that, as I just said that 3 minutes ago?
Yeah, I heard you say it. I was just kind of expanding on it there.
Well, expand.
In my own words.
Expand, because so far you've used just my words and have said the same thing.
That's not
if you're going
really...
to expand, let's expand a little bit.
Well, no, I was just trying to kind of build on what you said.
Yes,
there.
So build on it and not just repeat.
Kind of build it. Well,
add some letters.
My building was to say that I think the owners are full of greed, and that the greed is fully on display in today's society, today's world. And it's a shame that the players are the ones that have to carry that burden. Even the ones worth a lot of money, they're still not billionaires, you know? So I think that's a real shame. I think greed is a bad thing in general. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm not a fan of it. Yeah.
Baseball has been working to get back on track since 94, 95. And right now, they are the only professional sports league that looks kind of lost. I mean, I saw over the weekend that the Major League Soccer, MLS, that they're in a weird spot right now where they're saying, hey, we're not reporting down to Orlando to do anything until we have a new CBA. They want to use this as an opportunity to get some things fixed. So maybe the MLS won't necessarily run on time. I don't know, but we don't consider them a major sport.
The MLS?
Yeah. Like, MLS ranks behind, you know, college basketball, college football.
NASCAR.
NASCAR. I mean, it does rank behind NASCAR in terms of viewership. I mean, yeah, that's... So, I mean, like, it's eighth, ninth on the pecking order.
Golf.
Golf, behind golf. I mean, yeah, it, like
World
I said...
Tennis Federation.
I would rather watch tennis than MLS. I mean, I might be alone in that. I don't know. Like, I like soccer. I like watching the Premier League. I like watching the Champions League.
The professionals, the guys overseas.
The actual, like, elite talent. Yeah, like, the MLS is considered professionals, but, yeah, they are not elite. But, like, the MLS, I don't watch. I don't watch. So, they're not really high on my radar right now. Baseball is still thought of as one of the four main professional sports. One of the five main professional sports, if you take in the English Premier League, because a lot of Americans do watch that now.
Yeah, like, soccer is probably approaching baseball. Like, it's not at the point where it would pass baseball, but it's probably past hockey.
It's a conversation.
In terms of popularity amongst American sports, I'd say it's past hockey.
Especially when you take in the week-in, week-out stuff. I mean, more people keep up with soccer weekly than they do with than I would say people do with hockey until the playoffs type of thing.
Plus, more kids are playing it, you know. Like, you can't
more
really...
more accessible in the South, obviously.
Yeah, you don't really play hockey down South. Kind of a northern thing, Canadian thing.
So we'll see what happens with the players and the owners, but I mean, this could spill over for years. And baseball, who, I mean, you can rank them however you want. You can say, no, baseball's clear cut number three. And, you know, for a lot of people, the people that love baseball, it's their number one. There are people out there who like baseball more than football. And
those
like
of us who
basketball.
Are purists.
There are people out there like that. And they might not leave. They'll be mad, but they'll come crawling back whenever baseball starts back up. But for the other people, you know, you saw this happen already. Like I said last week, you had to basically turn a blind eye, if not even encourage, Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and all these guys to get on steroids. And we, you know, started celebrating a home run chase that these guys were clearly on steroids. Like, you could clearly see that they had grown in size and that they were bigger than they should have been.
They'd just been in the gym a lot.
But we were okay with it because we needed excitement, and baseball turned a blind eye to it because they needed some goodwill.
Maybe we'll get back to that.
I don't know if they can. I don't know if you can just all of a sudden just pump everybody back up with steroids and hope that it works for the second time, because it worked for a little bit, but, you know, baseball has been fighting an uphill battle since 94-95. Like, they had a spike where they got the national attention, but they have still been trying to climb back uphill to get back to where it's a conversation between basketball and football, where they are more so trying to chase number one and number two versus trying to hold off soccer and hockey and NASCAR and golf.
I think they should fall somewhere between trying to be as popular as basketball again and just staying ahead of the other sports. I think baseball should be comfortable with number three and just try to get close to basketball.
Sure.
Because you'll never top football.
And when baseball's hot, like, when they have a story, they can beat basketball from time to time when they have a hot story. Like, when the Cubs were there, like, that's a hot story. If the Yankees get back on top, then you get Yankees-Red Sox rivalries. Like, that could be a thing. Like, the Dodgers-Yankees
would
do
win
big
a World
numbers.
Series.
Right. Like, you know, there's still an option for them there to be, at least feel like number two when the timing is right. But, you know, how is it going to look during this 2020, how is it going to look if these sides can't come to any type of agreement? I think you're going to have people turn on the players.
Well, you need a good negotiator, a guy that can kind of do multiple things, like play both sides. You know what I mean? Kind of a switch hitter, if you will, to negotiate between the owners. You, kind of a middleman. That's what you need, I think. A guy
Shortstop
who can represent.
Even.
Well, you could. I don't know if that works. I don't know if that really works here, but.
Cutoff man work better?
Cutoff man, yeah. You need a guy.
To go get the message from, you know, maybe the outfield to get into.
You need a guy that's respected. It's a good businessman, but also he's a baseball man, you know?
No,
they
I,
gotta have
no,
those,
I don't.
Kind
I don't
of,
know.
Well, you know what I'm saying? Kind of a mediator. Kind of a mediator. It's what you need in any good negotiation. Right? You see the Waco series? You know?
No, I didn't.
You had the you had the David Koresh, you had those people.
I don't think that's a good example of it working.
And then you had the FBI.
But that didn't work out.
Well, no, but there was this negotiator for the FBI who was kind of painted as a good guy.
Yeah, but it didn't seem like he accomplished his goal. Didn't Waco completely disintegrated?
At the end of the day, it didn't work out. I'm just saying that was kind of what they were going for.
Right, but I don't know if I would use that as my example.
Yeah.
I don't think it worked out very well for the people of Waco.
That was kind of a fly ball on my part.
I don't feel like that works either. Pass ball, wild pitch.
A pop-up fly on my part.
You've already used...
I'm saying...
Maybe we're going with the pass ball.
What's it called? I hit the ball there, but it was easily caught in the outfield.
Yeah. I mean, a pop-up fly. There, but I don't... Yeah.
Fly ball worked, I think. Basically saying I hit the ball, but it was caught. I didn't really complete the reference.
Okay.
I didn't hit the home run.
I personally would have gone with a wild pitch.
Yeah.
Like you threw the pitch, but it didn't go where you wanted it. Ended up in the dugout. It just hit off my catcher's knee and went all the way in the dugout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been too many words to try and – the thing with these references is you're supposed to just kind of boom, hit them quick.
Yeah.
And that way you can just knock the segment out of the park. Which I feel like is what we've done here.
Players are upset about everything hitting Twitter, hitting the internet before the players are even finding out about it. Like, they're saying they're having to learn about all of these proposals from reporters tweeting it out, more so than, like, the owners contacting the players' union and having them put everything out. This has been a real issue of distrust among these players and owners. Right now, baseball could easily be back. Baseball could easily be back. They didn't have to deal with the issue of starting and restarting like basketball did. Basketball has to be a little bit more careful right now as basketball has to have a plan to finish the season, right? They can they have a little bit more that they have to take care of, more so than baseball just saying, hey, let's start playing. We have spring training parks across everywhere. We have empty arenas, empty stadiums we could play at all over the place. Let's go do this now. And we'll have time to figure out the playoffs. We might even have fans in time for the playoffs. Who knows? We can kind of figure it out as we go. Let's just get to the All-Star break. Whatever All-Star break we're going to have, let's start playing. Because we have a chance right now to be out in front of a bunch of eyeballs in America and try to gain ground on these sports we're chasing. But instead, baseball is balking.
I hope we can get something worked out soon. It's a sport that I've grown to really like. So, I'd like to see the boys play ball.
80 days after the league was shut down, the two sides are completely at odds. The owners are asking for major salary concessions without being willing to open their financial books, and the union leaders settled behind what might be an unsettled issue, depending on what the negotiated language says. The players want to see, like, hey, if you actually need us to take this pay cut, show us the books. Show us how you look financially. The owners all believe the players all believe that the owners are crying wolf when it comes to being poor and not being able to afford this. They look at it as a ploy to try to start moving things in their direction on this new CBA and trying to change the financial structure of baseball. It's going to be something to keep an eye on. As of right now, I don't know how you would feel confident that a season is going to get played. But we shall see. Because unlike basketball, unlike football, they can't play too deep into the year. Right? Like, you pretty much have a cutoff of November. You can play the World Series that first week if you need to, but you can't go much deeper than that.
It'd be interesting.
Maybe that would be something they have to do. Like,
guys playing in the snow.
Maybe they just take everything down to Florida or somewhere where it's not that cold up there. Maybe, but I feel like
you could get it done in like Florida or California.
Maybe, but I feel like they have more of a deadline because they don't want to. Like, their season's already so long that it would be harder for them to move anything back the next year, right? In terms of keeping the sport on track.
Yeah.
Like, say you have fans in 2021, you don't want to push that too far back to where you are having to play outdoor games in October in a lot of these places.
Yeah, maybe you just don't play this year. Hope it doesn't come to that, but could be.
It's one of the biggest things going on right now in American sports. Stick with us. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio.
date.
We talked some Tennessee football news earlier. We talked about Trey Curry and his commitment slash deletion when it comes to Tennessee recruiting. We talked about Tim Jordan facing charges down in Florida. Official take there on that before we move on. Tim Jordan going to be internally disciplined, still on the team, dismissed. Do you have a guess on that?
I think he will be still on the team. Internal discipline.
Cam?
Yeah, I think he'll get suspended for a bit, but I think he'll still be on the team.
I'm going to go with dismissal. That's going to be my vote.
That's what you're hoping for?
Wouldn't surprise me.
No, that's not what I'm hoping for. I'm not hoping for that. I'm telling you that's my official prediction. I think that'll be, I don't want to say this in a bad way or anything, but Tennessee.
Oh, boy. Here he goes.
Tennessee has been looking for some scholarships, and I think that's an easy one to get back at this point. And I just
really, you don't think he's
I don't know how important I would say he is, but I mean, I just think that it's a bad situation, and it's a decision that Jerome Pruitt will ultimately make.
Okay.
I just think gun charges and the scale and baggies make it a easy decision.
I'm just wondering if, like, with the current news, maybe you could not really slide it under the rug, but just like we were talking about earlier, we knew about it coming out of the weekend, but it wasn't a huge story because the news is – there's so much going on.
I don't think anyone's sitting around to wait on what Jerome Pruitt does with Tim Jordan.
But right.
Like I said, I think locally you'll have questions, and I do think that – again, this is just my prediction, not going off of anything I've heard or anything that I think – or anything that is more so than just my thoughts. I do think that he will end up being dismissed. ESPN ranked the college football quarterback tiers. We've talked a lot about NFL quarterbacks. College quarterbacks got ranked on ESPN and put into tiers by David M. Hell. I don't know. But
ESPN?
Yeah.
I've heard of that guy.
Okay. He's asking, he's putting people in tiers. He's ranking them not so much one through whatever, but just saying these are where they are slated. He only has two guys as your can't-miss superstars. I think everyone knows who those guys would be. Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, right? Your can't-miss superstars. Your two Heisman front-runners at this point. I've said all offseason that I feel like it is now Clemson versus Ohio State. Clemson, Ohio State versus the field is what I think the season turns into next year in terms of picking a winner. Agree or disagree?
I would probably agree with that right now.
And you're taking the field, or you're taking Clemson / Ohio State?
Oh, boy. That's a good proposition. I mean, that's why it is what you would say it is, if you're going to take one or the other.
Yeah.
Pretty even proposition there. I'll take the field.
Take the field.
Maybe Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields are both overrated.
Perhaps. I mean,
I've thought that maybe those two guys, like, just looking at the quarterbacks last year, they would have ranked last to me in terms of the elite quarterbacks.
The thing is, though, I feel like they are on really, really good teams.
They are, yes. And they're above where other quarterbacks are.
Yeah.
But
there's a chance a quarterback comes out of nowhere, though, like Joe Burrow, and maybe doesn't have the same year Joe Burrow had because that's, almost impossible to replicate.
I mean, that's just like Joe Burrow, Cam Newton.
It's not only that, but Joe Burrow had, two elite wide receivers as well.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think there could be one that comes along that's maybe good enough to lift one of those other two teams like a Alabama.
Well, the thing is, in the next tier two, just the elite players, there are six quarterbacks, and I'm going to read you these names, and I don't know who on this list would be one of those two lift a team when you see what teams are on. I mean, there might be one or two of these guys that make sense, but
Jamie Newman, huh?
Nope. Nope, not Jamie Newman. Tanner Morgan from Minnesota. BYU.
Yeah.
Another
Tanner Morgan sounds like a BYU player, in fairness.
Sam Howell.
Okay.
Sam Howell.
From?
I know where.
Sam Howell.
Yeah, I used to know this.
Sam Howell. I don't know where in the Sam Howell he plays.
North Carolina, right?
North Carolina. Brock Purdy.
Mm-hmm.
You used to be so smart
at college
football.
A school shooter.
What has happened to you?
Huh?
What has happened to you? You used to know so much about college football.
I don't
football.
Write about it anymore.
You just not care anymore?
I care, but I don't write about it anymore.
Brock,
once you reach the age that is over college age, it just feels strange to me. Like
Iowa State.
Good job.
Who's
by
that?
You, Cam.
Brock Purdy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Derek King.
Yep. Apologies to Brock Purdy for saying he sounded like a school shooter. Houston is where he did
no
play.
Longer.
He probably plays somewhere else now. Hang on, I'll get it. Texas Tech.
Nailed it.
Okay, yes.
Miami.
Damn it.
Sam Ehlinger.
Texas.
Keaton Slovis.
USC.
So of those six.
Good finish.
Of those six, who, I mean, like, I can see Texas or USC rising up if the quarterback play is elite, although I don't think Sam Ellinger's elite. Slovis was pretty good. I don't know if I would consider him elite, but those, I mean, Minnesota's not going to be a national title contender, right? I mean, North Carolina, Iowa State, Miami.
They had a couple good receivers, but yeah, they're not going to be national title contention
yeah.
level.
Minnesota lost one of those guys to the
yeah,
draft, too.
Yeah, they have another good one there.
And I think that Mr. Row the Boat's a pretty good coach. Like, I think that they will be a factor, you know, winning games. They'll win 8 or 9 games at least, but not national title contenders, no matter how good Tanner Morgan is. Slovis and Ehlinger have a little bit of a chance at Texas and USC just because I assume there's a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. At least at Texas. USC hasn't really recruited at that level, so maybe there's not talent there. They say Tier 3 is elite like Joe Flacco, which means probably good enough to win.
Do we think there's a chance that Texas finally emerges this year?
No, there's a chance. I mean, for everything we've said about Tennessee versus Oklahoma, like, there's a chance Texas could look and say, hey, Oklahoma's small up front, they don't have any receivers, and they're starting a new quarterback. This is their chance
Texas
to beat them.
Texas has the better quarterback, at least going into the year, as far as
yeah,
what we
Spencer
know.
Yeah, Spencer Rattler might be someone with Lincoln Riley that, you know, is a beast from day one, but if you're Texas, you're probably looking and saying, we got a good shot to, we should win the Big 12 this year.
Who are you taking right now to win the Big 12?
I don't have an answer to that. I hate Tom Herman. I don't
so
want to
Oklahoma?
Pick Texas. I don't know. Like, I mean, I just laid it out. Like, oh, Texas should feel good about their chances.
Well, who are you taking?
I don't have a pick right now. It's
just
June.
Curious.
I don't have a pick. It's June.
Off the top of your head.
TCU.
Brock Purdy in Iowa State.
Zach Evans going to go there and run through the league.
TCU. All right. I'm going to write that down. It's now on record. I'm going to take the field.
Elite like Joe Flacco, which I guess means they're good enough to win if you have the right team around them. This is where the SEC comes in heavy. Four of these five guys are SEC players. Kellen Mond, Jamie Newman, KJ Costello, Kyle Trask, Mikael Cunningham from Louisville is the fifth guy there.
Jamie Newman.
Tier 4, big shoes to fill. Basically just guys taking over for studs. Spencer Rattler, Bryce Young, Mac Jones, Jacob Sermon, Dylan Morris, Miles Brennan, LSU, Bryce Young, Alabama, Spencer Rattler, obviously Oklahoma. The other two were from Washington. Then they go into the non-Power 5 guys. They go into the game managers. They go into the up-and-comers. The wild cards. That's where JT Daniels is listed. He is a wild card down at Tier 8. And Tier 9 is where we then see open competitions. And that's where Jarrett Garantano is listed alongside Brian Maurer, which I don't know. I don't know how much research they've done here. Like, I don't know how you guys feel. I don't feel like it's an open competition between Jarrett Garantano and Brian Maurer. Do you?
Yeah, not Brian
Maurer. I think that Garantano is pretty much the starter going into the year.
Well, what tier would you have put him in then? Managers, maybe?
Game managers.
I guess, yeah.
I'd almost put him as a damn wild card. Like, you don't know what we're getting.
Yeah, that might be better because that's a lower tier. I'd say, yeah, put him as a wild card. But I think he's the starter going into the year.
Loose cannon.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's an open competition between him and Brian Maurer.
Well, you got to realize, too, the fact that Harrison Bailey hasn't had a spring.
Yeah.
Like, they, I mean, I think.
I don't even know if I feel like it's an open competition between him and Harrison Bailey. Like, I feel
I don't
like,
either.
I feel like Garantano is going to be the starter game one. Now, whether or not that's a good or bad thing, you know, you guys can argue about that amongst yourselves. I don't know right now.
I think it is the truth, though. Like, it is what's going to happen.
Right.
He's going to be your starter. You know, whether or not it works out, that remains to be seen. But he's the guy.
The quarterbacks who win the jobs at Michigan, Wisconsin, and Tennessee will inherit serious expectations and serious doubts. There's lots of upside at each program, but they'll all need dramatically improved quarterback play in 2020 to break through. I do feel like that's accurate. Hour two in the books. We'll kick off hour three with headlines. We'll play some winners and losers of the weekend. Let's talk sports. Fan Run Radio. We have seen, just since the show started, the Washington Nationals have went ahead and said, you know what, we're sorry about that whole minor league thing. We'll pay our minor leaguers. So the Nationals, as an organization, said, okay, we just won a World Series. Let's not ruin our goodwill so far. This soon, we will go ahead and pay our minor leaguers. There was a NBA's Board of Governors meeting on Friday, a call. And I don't know how familiar you are with the NBA's restart plan, Cody, but there is serious talk that they are just bringing back 22 teams in July. That the bottom four teams from each conference will be left out.
Okay.
That, you know,
nobody wants to see them play anyway, really.
I mean, if you cut a third of the league out, they're saying, hey, you can avoid some, you know, you can avoid potential spread and potential, you know, strain on the facilities and all that. Like the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are 19-46 and 11 games out of the playoffs in the East, don't really need to be there. We know they suck. Same as the Golden State Warriors. Although, if I'm the Golden State Warriors, I'm like, hey, we'll take a chance. Steph Curry's back healthy. Like, put us in this tournament. Make us run a gauntlet. And they might like their chances of pulling off some upsets. That might be actually fun to watch. But, yeah, the you know, in the East, the four teams that will be left out will be the Knicks, the Pistons, the Hawks, and the Cavs.
Oh.
I would like to see the Hawks, like, any type of like short playoff
tournament thing.
It'd be very
annoying,
like,
I think, for other teams.
Have a chance to maybe make a splash. The Spurs, Suns, Timberwolves, and Warriors. So, you know, of those teams, there aren't, you know, the Pistons, the Timberwolves, the Spurs would be considered small market at least. The Hawks aren't really small market. Atlanta's a big market. But some owners, including the Oklahoma City owner, who has put his name to it, has said that we really need to think about this and the financial strains that you will put on these smaller market teams that might not get to play. As the NBA moves towards a plan of only inviting 22 teams, Bennett spoke of exhausting ways to accommodate non-playoff teams still wanting to play. Is there a way to bring back all 30 teams? You're on board saying we don't need those, just bring back 22, have a short regular season, then do some type of tournament to decide who gets the playoffs?
Yeah, well, they got to do, you've said, a certain amount of games to get the local TV money, right? So they got to do that.
Yeah, which I don't know what happens to the teams that wouldn't get to do that. Like, I mean, surely they wouldn't make the other teams just miss out on local TV money, because there's no way any of these eight teams would agree, like, hey, we're not coming back at this point because we need that TV money.
Yeah, so I don't know if that would really make sense.
For the teams left out of the playoffs, they have said, hey, if you don't play, we might make you have a mandatory summer training camp and then play like a regional fall league of 4 to 5 teams that could help get bridge the gap between when you guys play basketball again, because basically you would have been playing – you'd have been going without 8 months without playing basketball as an organization. Like, if you look at March all the way up till, you know, if the season starts in December, you wouldn't get back together until, like, November. So, like, hey, we might have to make you play a summer thing. Just something to keep in mind. Now they have a vote on Thursday, Cody. The next deadline for the NBA is Thursday, whenever they will vote on how and when to restart the season. Right now, though, the NBA is working to complete the details of a 22-team format in Orlando.
Should we know on Thursday?
Yeah. Like, finally? I'd imagine Thursday we will have the plan hammered out.
I've been waiting for a long time.
A 3/4 majority of the 30 teams is required for a plan's passage. But the owners expect unanimous support for whatever the NBA's final proposal is. So basically they are trying to say, hey, here's what we want, but we're not going to vote against it and try to stop it because we want to look unified in this and we back what you want to do, Adam Silver, and the Players Association. Like, whatever you guys decide, we will just show strength and we will show unity and vote 30-0 in terms of getting this passed. Seems as if, like, you know, like I talked about last week, Cody, that they just want Zion Williamson in the tournament. They want to expand it and just make it 22 teams and have some fun there. And because in the East, like, I mean, like, there's no race for the 8 seed in the East. It's pretty much locked in. Like, the Wizards are 5.5 games back. But in the West, you do have a jumble of the Blazers, Pelicans, and Kings, only 3.5 games back from the Grizzlies.
I guess eventually we'll go to the reordered just seeding, 16. Right?
Yeah. They might do that this year. There's been a lot of talks of a 22-game type of format that, you know, maybe has some pool play in it involved. I don't know. They're trying to hammer this out before Thursday. We don't know what the proposal will be. And we don't even know, like, if there will be any type of advantage given to the Mavericks, who are basically 6 or 7 games clear of a playoff spot. Do they have to play in the play-in tournament because there's been talks, Cody, it'll be for the 7 and the 8 seed? That doesn't seem quite fair. Dallas is mad about that. We don't know. I don't know what the easiest way to do it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know some people feel like you should just go ahead and just give it the 8 teams in each conference. Most of those are Grizzlies fans saying that. Like, hey, we earned our spot. We don't want to have to do this again. I mean, they have a lead over the Pelicans through this amount of games. But, you know, the schedules haven't been balanced. And, you know, you thought you had more time together to try to make a run. So I don't think you can just go straight into the playoffs. But does a team deserve an advantage for being ahead in the standings? You can't just really spring that up on them of, hey, you got one game to decide who gets in the playoffs, even though you've been better through 65 games.
It's pretty wild that it's been this long now without any, like, live sports going on as far as team sports.
It's basketball. Wild that also they don't have any plans. It's wild that they haven't, like, thought of the plan between now and then, like, that we're still here. That's the crazy part to me, Cody, is we're 4 days away from the vote and they don't know what they're voting on yet. And they've had 3 months to come up with a plan.
Yeah, it's been almost 3 months. Like, it was, I guess, middle of March, right, when basketball ended. So 2.5 months.
Yeah.
Would you have thought that we were going to go that long without basketball?
Yeah.
Like when we first knew that it was what it was?
When we first knew what it was, I mean, there were people worried that it wouldn't be football.
Yeah.
Like when it first happened, I mean, I don't know if you remember the feeling around that, but I mean, we thought, you know, we might not get sports in the fall either. I mean, I remember putting polls up and like 2 weeks into it, there were people saying there would be no football at all. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, I thought basketball might not come back.
I wonder where they'll play most of the games. Are they going to do
Orlando, the Disney World.
Orlando thing?
Yeah. Yep.
Is that where they're going to do everything?
Yep. Hmm. There had been talks of splitting it between Orlando and Vegas, but I think if they just do this 22-team format, they think that all of them can just handle Orlando.
Just put them up in the hotels at Disney World.
It'll be fun. Like, I mean, because I'd imagine they'll have some, like, family maybe that the family they're quarantined are allowed to go to games. So that'd be cool if we have some trash talking among the families.
That would be entertaining.
Have some beef between the wives of other players and stuff. Like, that could be cool. Some run-ins after the game. You know, you had the story a couple years ago of the Rockets trying to go through back tunnels to get into the Clippers locker room to fight them? Like, yeah. Who knows? Maybe if you're all in Orlando, there's a fight that breaks out. Although I would imagine the NBA is going to be on pins and needles. Like, hey, guys, you have to be on your best behavior.
One of the Disney rides.
Yeah. So-and-so has sprung an ankle getting off the Tower of Terror.
The teacups are over there.
The financial elements, they say that if they have a 22-team format, that's worth several hundred million dollars more in revenue than the 16-team straight-to-playoffs plan. So it's definitely going to be the 22 team model if you can make, quote, hundreds of millions of dollars more.
Man, I would like to see the Hawks, though.
Well, according, I mean, the ESPN article that I'm reading has the Hawks owner, Tony Ressler, who passionately pleaded, saying that they want to keep playing.
I think it's huge for development, too.
Like, yeah. He said he wants to keep playing and said that he wants to do whatever he can to get back on the field, on the court, and didn't even really, like, talk about any chance for the playoffs. Just basically, like, we want to get out there and play,
yeah.
Which I don't know if that means they want the local money. Again, I don't know how the local money is affected by this, but, you know, maybe just wants to have his guys out there being competitive.
Yeah, I want it more for the competitive, just growth as the young, because it's such a young team. I think that competitive experience would be good for them. I could care less about the playoffs at this point.
But not every, they say not every team that is eliminated from the playoffs feel the same way. And, like, yeah. Some of those players don't want to come back, so.
Sounds like a bunch of losers to me.
Yeah, it does. It does. But, again, if you knock off 8 of your 30 teams, that does seem to take a pretty big amount of strain off of the facilities that have to host you and the doctors and all that. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. That vote's on Thursday. We'll play some winners and losers of the weekend as we wind down this Monday edition of Talk Sports. Stick with us.
Hi, this is Liz.
All right, let's play some winners and losers of the weekend. It is Monday. It is 2:30. Cameron, please hit that beautiful, soothing music.
Winners and losers. Winners and losers. Winners and losers.
Winners and losers.
Winners and losers.
All right, man, hit me with your winners of the weekend.
All right, dude. Okay, bro. Number 3 winner of the weekend for me, I'm going with J.R. Smith, who beat up that guy who was trying to vandalize his car.
Yep.
I think good for J.R. Smith. He said, hey, don't mess with that. I'm going to beat you up, and he did. He beat the guy up. And as a result, J.R. Smith made news and was praised. My number 2 winner, SpaceX. SpaceX is what I'm trying to say. SpaceX. Elon Musk, privately owned. Cam, you said, is this the first time a privately owned company has gone to space?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Say. At least it's US-wise, I couldn't think of anybody outside of NASA that has done it.
It's always been a national thing. Yeah. Even though they were kind of dominated in the news because of everything else going on, it was cool to see. That was one thing that people kind of rallied around, I think, on the weekend, over the weekend, seeing the rocket launch.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. And my number 1 winner, I go with a hockey team in Huntsville, Alabama. The University of Alabama Huntsville men's hockey team.
Okay.
Have you heard this story? Guess not.
No.
Turns out they were set to close down shop and end their program just over a week ago. That is, until private donors and the hockey world stepped in and raised an absurd amount of money to revive the program.
Okay.
1 week after the Chargers men's hockey program said it would be eliminated, alumni and supporters started a GoFundMe account and raised more than guess how much money to revive the program to play this season. You got to realize, University of Alabama, Huntsville. You been to Huntsville? Not a lot going on in Huntsville, except, well, NASA, which kind of ties to the last point, which is interesting. But anyway, guess how much money for a small college hockey team?
I feel like it doesn't take that much money to fund the small hockey team, so I guess it's going to be like $300,000, but I'm imagining you're going to hit me with like $8 million.
Oh, no, it's not that much. But $500,000,
oh,
$500,000.
$300,000 was a pretty good guess.
Yeah, $500,000. Seems like a lot of money
for just a hockey team. You were really overselling that.
You think so? I mean, you guessed $300,000.
Well, I mean, I know.
It was $500,000.
It's pretty close.
Not really. It's $200,000 more than what you said. You only guessed 60% of the figure.
I feel like it was pretty close, though, on a scale of raising money.
So if you're not impressed by the story.
If it's $1 up to like $500 million, I feel like I did pretty close, you know.
They're not going to raise $500 million. I mean, that would.
Well, I mean, I know. So $10 million. I mean, I feel like $200,000, pretty close.
So you're not impressed by the fundraising effort for the University of Alabama Huntsville men's hockey team.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Have you considered the players on the University of Alabama Huntsville men's hockey team?
I'm happy for them.
You would call them winners, yes? Is this a bad number one winner of the week?
No, I'm happy for them that they get to keep playing. It
seems like you hate this story.
I don't. I don't. Do I sound like I hate this story? I don't want to sound like I hate this story. It's a cool story.
I was just trying to highlight a semi-local.
I don't think that's. I don't think we call that semi-local.
I mean, we call Nashville semi-local. Like it's Huntsville's in the state. Not. I mean, yeah, but it's not far. It's like Tennessee River runs by there. I mean,
you got any? Was that number one?
That was my number one winner. I'm sorry you hated it so much.
We had the same number three. I got J.R. Smith as my number three as well. May 31st is now his day. He redeemed himself. A couple years ago, he had the infamous Game 1 meltdown of the NBA Finals where he did not know how much time was left on the clock.
Oh, wow. That happened on the same day?
Yep. And then a couple years later, he beat someone's ass for busting his truck windows.
I didn't realize it was the same day.
Now, we'll see if J.R. Smith's the winner at the end of this because I feel like he kind of incriminated himself by putting out the video. We'll see if this guy can find out he has a bunch of money and sue him for something. I don't know.
I mean, it was pretty clear that guy was beating on his car, though, wasn't it?
Can you beat on someone's face for beating on your car? I don't know. I don't know what the rule is there.
I don't know either. I feel like you should be able to, but...
I know there's rules about property, like in defending property, but he didn't, like, kill the guy. Obviously, he just punched him in the face a couple times. I don't know.
Very well.
But for now, he is my number three winner of the weekend. Number two, I'll go with NASCAR. I saw a lot of people talking about how good the NASCAR race was yesterday that Bristol delivered in terms of the excitement. Feel the same way, Cam. I saw a lot of people saying it was a really good race.
Yeah, it was. They always keep it really interesting there because it's such a small track and it's real easy to kind of like lose your grip and stuff. So there was a lot of wrecks, which kept it interesting and, you know, sucks for the drivers, I guess, if it kind of got knocked out. But yeah, it keeps it interesting to watch because you never know what's going to happen and, you know, anything can happen at any time. And yeah, I enjoyed watching it, the parts I was able to watch. So, yeah, I can definitely see how it got big talk about it. That's good for Bristol, though. Maybe there's some people that have never really, like, wanted to go to Bristol now are like, oh, whenever, you know, you can go back. Or like, oh, yeah, let's take a trip to Bristol and watch NASCAR. So
Bristol delivers, man. I would suggest anybody go to a Bristol race, whether you're a fan or not.
The last couple weeks have put out some really good racing, and no fans have been there to see it. But they've been home watching on TV, so... We'll see what the TV ratings look like, but I just saw NASCAR people that either are fans or used to be fans or whatever saying that they were impressed with the racing. So good news for NASCAR this weekend. They're number two. My number one winner of the weekend was my guy, though, Gilbert Burns. I thought that he looked awesome, and he is now my favorite UFC fighter. He might be that's not what makes him the big winner, although like I think it kind of helps, but he is going to be maybe in line to be the number one contender and fight for his weight division's championship, which would then set himself up for big money. And, you know, these guys had to fight on ESPN+/ESPN. I'd imagine his next fight will be on pay-per-view because he has earned himself to be a draw. And I'll throw in honorable mention for Jamal Hall Hill. He was a – Jamal Hall. Jamal. That's a weird way to spell Jamal. Is it Jamal? J-A-M-A-H-A-L? Is that just Jamal?
Yeah, I think that would just
I've never Jamal. Seen Jamal spelled that way.
Me neither.
But Jamal Hall felt weird. So, well, Jamal.
Jamal.
No, you're putting the H in the wrong place. Jamal Hall.
Where's the H?
In between the A and the A-L.
So it's J-A-M...
A-H-A-L.
Jamal Hall. Jamal Hall.
I thought he looked awesome, too. And pretty good for him. They were immediately interviewing him afterwards, which, by the way, Daniel Cormier, he's been a big winner of this, too. Like, Daniel Cormier seems really, really good as a UFC announcer. Like, he is really, really good at doing the interviews, too, and they all respect him because they know he's a bad man, and he can never beat Jon Jones, but he is kind of the face of UFC when it comes to current fighters. Like, he's the only one still around that can actually, like, fight and do his thing when he has to, but he was interviewing Hill afterwards, And it was just like, you know what? Your win was so impressive that Halle Berry texted Dana White and said, you're the real deal.
Ooh. Oh,
and he's like, what? Really? Oh, shout out to her. Like, yeah, Halle Berry apparently watching UFC and texted Dana. Like, this guy is electric. Put him on more fights. So maybe he'll be on pay-per-view as well. I thought he was a big winner. So those are my biggest winners, Gilbert Burns and Jamal Hill.
Is this a single man?
I don't know. He might be.
Be now.
If he's not, his girlfriend is probably mad, salty, that Halle Berry was firing off some texts on his behalf.
Does Halle Berry still have it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Halle Berry still got it.
She works out a ton. Like
Halle Berry.
She's around the fighting world because she has a personal trainer that kind of does stuff similar to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Halle Berry still has the juice.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think she's 53.
She still has the juice, though. What a beautiful woman.
Halle Berry.
What a woman. Those are my biggest winners of the weekend. Cody, hit me with your losers, please.
Oh, boy, Catwoman. You ever heard of Catwoman?
Yeah, that movie was garbage.
Yeah, it's one of the worst movies of all.
Looks like a good movie to me.
Just watch the basketball scene.
Number three loser for me, I'm going to go with baseball fans. It's not looking good for baseball, probably behind the other sports as we discussed earlier. So, number three, I go with baseball fans. Whether you're on the player's side or the owner's side, whatever, I mean, the fans not going to be able to get to watch baseball is going to be a problem.
Seems bad.
Number two loser for me, people in cities who just opened their stores back up after the coronavirus. It'd be a really bad time to have a storefront.
It shouldn't be funny. It's not funny. It's bad timing.
It may not be funny, but it's kind of, I mean, it sucks. You know, there was a pandemic, so we were closed for 2.5 months.
Yeah, no, that's awful.
And then the week we opened up, we got bricks through the window.
That's tough.
So that would be tough. I'm sure there's several examples of places like that. I was watching on the news last night. I know Santa Monica, there were several storefronts that have been knocked out there and all around the country. So that sucks. And my number one loser is coronavirus. Sorry, bro. We just forgot about you.
We're on a side quest.
We got new things going on now. You know, you're old news. COVID-19. We were sick of you. So we replaced you.
We'll see.
With burning cars in Seattle.
We'll see. I hope that Rona doesn't remind everyone that she's around. I hope that we are just like, yeah, that was crazy. It's over.
Rona's old news.
No, that was your biggest loser of the weekend?
Yeah.
Number three for me, I went with baseball owners. You went with fans. I went with the owners. I just think that they are looking bad right now. But either way, baseball fans. Baseball in general, just a loser right now. Number two for me, I went with Alabama kickers. They were just minding their business last night and... Now, the video game kickers missed two kicks in the Dougs-Tennessee-Alabama game as Dougs was able to go in and go into Tuscaloosa and win. Alabama's kickers just minding their own business and yet got made fun of on the internet last night because a computer version of them missed two kicks.
Boy, I forgot all about Dougs.
It's a weird time to be doing the video game
with all the news going on, I completely forgot.
It's a little weird to be doing that right now.
That Florida game was a lot bigger last weekend than the Alabama game.
Alabama was good, though. Went to overtime.
Yeah.
Went to overtime. He won by 1 point.
Went for two. And that's still here.
Went for two and got it.
Damn that.
Number one, my biggest loser of the weekend, sex in the UK. The government is now deeming that you cannot have sex with someone in your house unless they live with you.
Oh, no.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Sex in your house with someone from outside of your household is set to become illegal.
What if you live with your mom?
I would hope that wouldn't matter at all in this situation.
I know. I'm just saying nobody can come in from the outside. What if, you know, you live with your sister or you live with an aunt?
What is wrong with you?
That's the point of the story.
They're not going to be able to. Really, they're basically it's new lockdown measures that will prevent people from socializing with one person from outside their household in a private space. Like, basically, you can't have a friend come over.
Even worse for some guys. What if you just live with your wife?
Okay, we'll just go to break.
Because you don't get it doesn't mean the audience.
You don't think I get it? You think it was just so high?
You get it. Just because you don't like it doesn't mean someone else didn't chuckle.
Yeah, that's fine.
You
and just because you think it was worth a chuckle doesn't mean that other people just look at it and say, "Wow, that was really dumb." And that was
Really dumb. It's a lot of guys have trouble living with their wives. It was a everyday man reference.
Mine was more.
And you've
gone
away from being everyday man. You used to be a man's man.
Mine was more about you talking about sex with your mother. That was more the thing that
bothered me. I wasn't saying have sex with your mother. That's not what I said.
That's what was weird to me.
No, don't try to Freud me. I said it would suck if you just lived with your mom, like you couldn't even have a girlfriend come over. Like, you live at home with your parents. Wouldn't that be awful?
That has nothing to do with the story.
Of course it does, because those are the only other people in the house. That was my point.
So what was your point?
That you couldn't have sex.
But you could have before the law? Like, I don't understand the point.
Yeah, you could have had people come over before. Now you can't, right? Because the UK outlawed having sex in your home with anyone you don't live with.
But where's the mother come into it?
Because you're not going to have sex with your mother. If you live at home with your parents, it would suck. It means you can't have sex at home with anyone.
But you couldn't have had sex before the law was made in. The law just got made. You still lived with your mother
yesterday.
Now you can
still bring your girlfriend over, though. Now you can't.
So what's the problem with the law? So I don't understand why the mother being there has to do with anything. Because are you not bringing the woman home because mom lives there? Or are you trying to make a joke about having sex with your mother?
I'm not talking about having sex with your mother.
I don't understand what the point of this is.
The point was that you can't have anybody come over, as the story reads in the headline.
Right, but living with your mom, like, are you saying you weren't bringing them over because your mom lived there before? Or, like, what are you saying?
No, you could still bring them over before.
So what does the mother have to do with anything?
Well, I'm just saying it would be one of the more unfortunate situations to live at home with your mother.
Do you understand what he's saying, Cam? Am I just missing this? Or was he trying to make a weird incest joke and now he's trying to backtrack?
I thought it was an incest joke joke was about cheating on your wife. I'm just completely lost.
God, that is not what it is. What have you known me to backtrack on incest?